Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
You're listening to MacBreak Tech. Sharing music is easy. We now join a conversation already in progress.
Airfoil looks cool. That's what I need to get. I need to get a stupid Airport Express.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you need is an Airport Express.
I love my Airport Express. I have it hooked into my nice THX surround sound system at my house. It works really nice.
Yeah.
Especially with Airfoil, then it's very, very cool.
Do you have multiple ones? Why would you need Airfoil if you don't have, unless you have multiple Airport Expresses?
Well, the nice thing with Airfoil is that it gives you a little more control over than just the built-in speaker sharing I found.
Oh, I see.
So I personally like using Airfoil better. And if you did have multiple Airport Expresses or you had multiple speaker systems and they're all in sync, that's always been a problem with the wireless audio. But the new version of Airfoil makes the synchronizing of sharing audio wirelessly like that really nice. And you can share the audio stream to another computer. It's not just to a Airport Express.
Got it.
Cool. So with the Airfoil, can you stream to multiple speaker sources at the same time?
Yeah, Airfoil 3, I'm pretty sure, lets you go to, like, you can have multiple Airport Expresses hooked up with multiple speakers hooked in.
See, that's the big problem with iTunes, is that it only lets you do one device.
I see. Yeah, this thing says it'll send it to multiple Airport Express units in sync, or even to other local Macs.
Yeah, there you go.
At the same time.
That would be a weird latency issue to try to solve if you were just a little bit out of phase.
You're writing your own drivers to slightly delay, so you can dial in the milliseconds of delay for each one.
The cool thing about the new version of Airfoil is that it now lets you play video on your Mac. So if you have like a 24-inch iMac, you can watch a movie and use Airfoil to stream the audio to a home theater system.
Nice.
Hmm.
So does it do it in surround-around sound or just to...
You know, I don't remember off the top of my head. I haven't done it enough at my house with a movie because I've got such a nice DVD player and all that. I don't do that much for my own house.
Well, I guess with Apple TV, that the need for that kind of goes away where you don't have to do the stream to the device to make it go.
Yeah, the new version of Apple TV definitely makes that change. So,
I'm really excited about everything that we're going to talk about in the next whatever. Because this is a huge problem that everybody has to solve. And that is, I have my music on my iPod. And, you know, I don't have a family. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have this problem of having to share music between devices.
The household problem.
Sure. I have a problem of one, so I don't have a problem. But a lot of people have this problem. There's more than one person, you know, whether it's a couple or it's a family. And how do you deal with the fact that everybody needs to have their music on whatever device they want?
Right.
So there's a couple of huge things, and one of the first problems that people have is that they want their music at work and at home.
Right.
So they have that problem to solve.
Well, or if you're going out on travel and you have a huge music library, like I'm out on travel doing a bunch of remote things right now, I had to figure out how was I going to take my iTunes library with me and synchronize it with my iPhone and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, you need a 160 gig iPhone.
Or you have a 160 gig portable hard drive.
Well, that doesn't exactly talk to your iPhone, unless you hook it up to the Mac that you're traveling with.
Which is what I have done. I know the secret way of making that work.
What is that? Pray tell.
The trick is, and I learned this quite a long time ago with iTunes, is that my home system, I have way more than 160 gigs of music and movies at my house. I have probably closer to a terabyte.
Mm-hmm.
But I selected a 120 gigs that I wanted to take along with me, and I copied that into a new library, basically, on my home system. On my laptop, I literally throw the iTunes library away. I make whatever was on my local system, I throw that folder away. But then I make an alias to the iTunes library that sits on my hard drive. So when my external hard drive is plugged in and I launch iTunes, it just sees the music library because the alias on my local music file points to the external hard drive. But when the hard drive is unplugged and iTunes launches, it says it can't find the local music library and doesn't open up. So it's smart enough now. In the old days, it didn't. It would create a new library and you had all kinds of problems. But the new version of iTunes now will just say it can't find the local library and quits out. So it's kind of nice. I can carry my library with me. I can change my playlist. I can resynchronize with my iPhone on the road with my laptop and have this nice synergy that way.
That solves the alias solves a huge problem. If you have an external disk that you store your library on, but then when you go to someplace else and you open iTunes, it'll start downloading podcasts and movies and all the other stuff that's going on. And so you basically have two libraries on your that it's accessing. And it can be really annoying because you're like, where did all the disk space go again?
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
And Kenji, does your solution? What would you do about merging? Do you care at all about merging your metadata back into that main library when you get home, or do you not care about that stuff?
Well, no. That's what's cool is that I've learned that I can competently merge the libraries back together. So I've already bought some new music while I've been on the road.
Okay.
And I've downloaded new podcasts.
Right.
What I typically do is that I export just that segment, so my music library or things like that, as metadata, basically, out from iTunes, and then remerge it or remerge the databases in general. And iTunes is pretty adept at doing that now. There are some gotchas sometimes, but if you're careful and you follow through a pretty rigorous path, you can make it work. And I've had it work pretty nicely. The other thing that I do also is that I, when I leave my main library from my house, I export a version of the library at that moment in time so I know where my library was, and I basically do a comparison on the XML or, in essence, look at the libraries and see what I've added to it since I left my house.
Interesting. Just a diff between the two?
Yeah, basically, that's what I'm doing, yeah.
So what about a normal mortal? I mean, how would they...
come down from Olympus and let's find solutions.
If they don't want to use a command line incantation to make that work...
A normal mortal can go into the current version of iTunes, and what you can do is you can actually merge libraries, or what's called consolidate libraries. It's under the Advanced tab under iTunes.
Okay.
So you go consolidate library, and it brings up a dialog saying consolidating your libraries will copy all of your music into the iTunes music folder. This cannot be undone. You hit consolidate. And what it does is lets you go out and find, or basically it's finding all that music and doing a copy. So, but
if you sort of have some, a little bit of manual management of your library and that you're not letting iTunes manage where the songs go, if you have some other folder, that would make a second copy of all of those files, wouldn't it?
It potentially will. So the other way to do it, and this is what I, in essence, am doing, is I go to File, Import. And that is what I say when I export individual libraries. I export my podcast, my music file, and then I import each of those in and then basically let it do the internal figuring out, you're importing the podcast, and here's the ones you already have, and here's the new ones you've added. Again, it doesn't always work foolproof, and this is still one of the little gotchas, in my opinion, with iTunes. But especially the latest version of iTunes, it works pretty well now.
I guess there's always a reason to upgrade to the newest version of iTunes.
Yeah.
Because it's actually fixing some of these problems that we've seen in the past where it just didn't deal correctly.
Mm-hmm. The media management thing does get a bit squirrely, even with just two people. Christina and I have different enough music tastes that we keep our stuff in separate folders, and we'll grab things for our libraries from each other's folders.
Okay.
But I definitely don't want to have to deal with everything that she wants to listen to, and whether or not the different ratings. Definitely don't want to have her influences, her stuff influencing my playlist, so that sort of thing. But so we have two folders that we end up just merging between the two libraries.
I see. Do you use the double click or open iTunes with the option key down to pick the library?
Two different accounts. We just
two
have
different accounts.
Yeah, we have different accounts. So the libraries are separate. Uh-huh. The music is all on a shared drive.
Cool. That's a good way to go. Otherwise, if you're trying to use one account. You can always switch libraries by holding down the option key when you open iTunes.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Ben's trying it right now.
I am. I'm learning something new every day. I love it.
Yeah, it is a great tip. And I always forget about that tip myself when I'm talking with people when they're trying to manage multiple libraries like that. So
that'd be a good thing for something like if you want a holiday library. There are certain sections of your media that you only want certain times.
Like, for example, the holiday music. Mm-hmm. I want the holiday music to go away
on
January the 1st.
Yeah, and you don't want to have to, if you do any metadata management on that, like ratings and playlists and stuff, you don't want to have to recreate that. So you don't want to have to delete all that stuff out of your library and then re-import it every year.
Yeah. No, and then, or you just delete all the holiday music that you have on a DVD somewhere anyway and then re-import it.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, no, I just want to have that open up. Do that one thing. Make it go away.
Make sure your President's Day library is all set, ready for you for President's Day.
Well, it's Presidents of the United States of America playing on random the whole day.
Right.
Yeah. All those great songs and hits about George Washington and Lincoln and,
Presidents of the United States of America.
Yes.
It's the only band that has two guitar players and two bass players and one drummer, but there's only three people.
Wait, how's that? Oh, okay.
How does that work? They have this custom guitar that has two bass strings and four guitar strings.
Yeah.
So it's all a mix. So one of the cool things that we discovered, I don't know, probably 2 years ago or 3 years ago when the thing came out, was it the power of Airport Express.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Airport Express is really our... the unsung hero of airports, because they're not just access points. In fact, the one here in the office doesn't actually do anything wireless. It's just hooked up to the stereo.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing is that all the people have their own music libraries, and they hook up to the Airport Express, and then they play their playlists.
Okay,
and that's a really good way to share the music around.
And one person at a time. There's no like jukebox functionality where it's queuing stuff up
from
a variety of playlists. One person at a time is
one person at a time. Yeah, so that it's like it's like 11 to 7. It's Mike, and from then it's somebody else.
There was at a former company, the boss wanted to have everyone had all this music on a server, and we wanted to be able to just queue stuff up, add stuff to the playlist on the fly. This is Winamp days. I don't know if you ever got anything working for it, but. It's a nice idea.
Yeah. Well, you can do that with a squeeze box.
Okay.
You can have the common library on a computer, and the squeeze box is actually running a server.
Okay.
So you can log into that IP address.
And you can queue stuff up.
And then you can make your own playlist
from
there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so like if you really, really, really want to hear Rush right now,
right.
You know, you could just.
And I do.
And you do. And so you could just queue Rush. And then it would show up in the playlist that's going. So if it's on random, for example, you could just say, well, stop being random. And when you're done playing that song, go to this.
Very cool.
The fun thing about that is that everybody on the network could see that music controller, the squeeze box.
There's just a little web interface for it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually literally just listening to Tom Sawyer.
So
those who don't know,
the thing with the squeeze boxes is it used to be very expensive, and since Logitech bought them, they've come down in price quite a bit. It used to be, one of those things you're like, oh, I don't know if that's an effective use of my money,
right?
And now it's only $300, so definitely makes things a lot easier.
They've still got the deluxe version if you're really into it, the audiophile version. It's $2,000, and it's got VU meters. I can't tell from the picture if they're real VU meters.
They're real VU meters, yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I guess it's just probably got, more digital ins and outs?
It's got an Ethernet port on the back.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So you can hook it up to the network. And then from there, you can have hook it up to whatever audiophile speakers you want to have.
Right. It's got XLR connectors too, so.
Which is hilarious because you better have FLAC files playing off that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, to play your 128K MP3s.
off of the out the XLRs into right. Into the whatever.
Well, you want to hear the artifacts. You want to know that they're there, and you want to hear them with all the clarity.
And you want to hear all the swishies in the background really clearly.
That's right, cymbal swish. Do you have a squeeze box, Kenji?
Actually, I do not. Although I have played with it several times, but that's one of the things I do not have in my plethora of equipment.
This is becoming the shopping show for me. So far on my queue, I need an Airport Express because I haven't had one at home. And the squeeze box looks pretty good, too. Yeah. So I'll probably have to get them both and try them out head-to-head.
I've brought my Airport Express with me on the road. So
did you?
I have that with me. I've got my... I actually have most of my iTunes and music listening library with me. Or at least the stuff that I really want to listen to on the road.
Well, the Airport Express is not that much money. It's $100.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really, you know, if you have that thing where you go, I really want to get my computer hooked up to that stereo over there, you can just plug that in, talk to it wirelessly,
right.
and you're on your way.
I think that the limiting factor for us in the past has been that we have a really crappy little stereo in our living room, so I've always had this, well, I need to get something good to listen on before I care about what I'm pushing
sure.
to the thing. But
should watch Craigslist for free, because people are giving away amps and big speakers all the time.
True.
So you can get that the watts in there and
the big heavy
better.
Things.
Yeah, big heavy things. Back mm-hmm. reminds me of being in eighth grade all over again. So, well, anyway, that kind of those are some solutions for getting music to your stereo to another location in your house that doesn't necessarily want to have a computer there, like your living room or your game room or the kitchen. You know, those are really computer incompatible places. Mm-hmm. And the big thing is that, you know, getting the Ethernet to where that is. So the Airport Express fixes that problem, but you could also use a gaming router hooked up to the squeeze box.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There actually is one other wireless solution that I just recently came across that utilizes Bluetooth, and it's kind of cool.
Oh, wow.
It's called the Lab Blue Tango Classic, I think it is. And it basically is a... I think that's the one that lets you basically drive audio out through Bluetooth. So you can actually have your Bluetooth as your audio source or as your audio transmission, basically, and then have it send it out to your stereo system.
Now, why would you use Bluetooth instead of 802.11 whatever?
If you want to minimize the amount of traffic you have on your wireless connection. So if you don't want to mess up your – if you don't want to have a lot of additional interference, especially if you live in a pretty crowded area, you might want to think about using Bluetooth because you're going to totally have a separate set of wireless signals traveling around that should not interfere with your Wi-Fi as much.
What about people sniffing your Bluetooth and figuring out that you're listening to Rush? Is that not a consideration?
Potentially, I guess it is, but – you know, I left my speaker system open, and as far as I know, no one ever listened to it on my Wi-Fi side.
Well, that's, you know, that would be the only downside of having an open Airport Express is getting some music streamed to you that you really don't like.
Yeah.
I was just looking.
Why am I listening to Milli Vanilli? Like, where did this come from?
I was just looking on the Slim Devices site. The new version of the squeeze box does have wireless. I don't know if the old one
It didn't.
Okay, so the new one's got 802.11g.
Nice.
So that solves that issue as well.
Yeah, well, that part, the Broadcom part, is pretty much everywhere. I mean, they can add that into anything for like $5.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a feature.
Does the do any of us have a PS3 yet? The PS3 has some sort of media functionality as well, where it's since it's going to be in your living room most likely, it's able to look for photos and music. I think videos even on your machine and bring it to your living room.
Well, that's
there's several hacks out there.
For both hacks? The Xbox. Okay, they made it look like it was something like it's a feature of the PS3. Maybe I'm not correct.
Since I don't own a I don't have a PS3 right now.
The Xbox has something, though. They have hacks for the Xbox, don't they?
Yeah, no, the Xbox definitely has hacks.
Right.
But on the PS3 side, I'm not positive right now.
I just got a Wii. So I, you know, it's like, well, I can get a PS3 today, or, oh, hey, magic, a Wii.
Well, it just seems like for a lot of folks, instead of having a dedicated DVD player of one of the two available flavors for HD and having a media center type PC of some sort in the living room, the game player for some folks might be a good way to just get it, get all of that media pushed to you, sure, in a place where you're going to be hooked up to the TV by default anyway.
Right. The issue becomes if you have any encrypted music, right? You're not going to be able to necessarily play it back there.
Right.
Some music is encrypted for a reason.
Why is that, John?
It's never supposed to be heard by people.
Okay. Well, actually, did you hear what was it? U2's manager came out and said that people are stealing music. So another, you know, manager coming out saying people are stealing music.
Whose manager was this? U2?
Yeah.
U2's manager.
Interesting.
Was, I think, came out at some conference in Europe, huh, saying that we need stronger standards on music protection.
Yeah, well, pretty much
swimming
if they,
against the tide.
If they keep making all these things, people are going to go, well, I don't really want to listen to music anymore.
Mm. Yeah,
it's just too difficult for me. So one of the things that iTunes does really well is it allows you to share music with other computers.
Mm-hmm.
You turn this feature on, the sharing thing, and then anybody on your network can then go and listen to music that's on your machine. Now, it doesn't let you copy that file from that machine.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing about that is that you can experience other people's music in a whole new way.
Right.
You know, find songs that you never knew you liked and kind of eke them out. I've done that several times when I've been consulting at a company, is they'll have an open network and kind of go through their music libraries, like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Sure.
One company.
At a cafe or something like that. I've browsed other folks' libraries at cafes before just to see if there's any
If there's anything worth being listening to. The
Right. Right.
What is that weird feedback that we're hearing?
I think, is it someone else talking near you, Kenji?
Yeah, it's probably someone near me, yeah. So. Yeah, yeah, it's David, so.
That's weird.
Is he on a sales call? He sounds very emphatic about what he's talking about.
Probably. Is he just kind of in the background there?
So a conversation already in progress has another conversation in progress in the conversation.
The conversation in progress is in progress with this additional conversation.
Right. Well, hopefully there's nothing incriminating in that other phone call. How funny.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, anyway, share music within your household, within your office, within that, because it does make the idea of discovering music happen again.
And right. It's very easy to turn on. That's probably the simplest way. We're talking about a lot of different sort of higher friction ways of getting music around, but just turning on the sharing is probably the easiest way to get that going.
Mm-hmm.
The multiple libraries anyway.
Let's talk about the age ever problem of syncing iPods.
Yes.
Now, I know how to sync. I can sync an iPod really easily. All I need is a glass of water.
Nice.
It's just like how to sync a Trio. I can sync a Trio.
Yeah, or a Zune or anything.
Yeah,
like that,
it's
right?
Easy to sync that stuff. Yeah. But this is the age old problem of people. Two things happen. One of them is that their computer gets wrecked,
mm-hmm,
and so they have to erase it because it got viroed up, or it got stolen. So then all the music is gone again. Or even worse is you have a argument and somebody goes and deletes all your music. Or
it sounds like you're speaking from experience.
Yeah, not from my own experience, but and then the last one is that. The person deletes the music from their computer to make more room. They do it intentionally.
Right.
And so they're like, all right, so
then it's only left on the iPod.
It's only left on the iPod. So it gets moved to the iPod, but then it doesn't ever come off. So so we've come up with a bunch of scenarios where people have a legitimate need for being able to recover the music off an iPod. The issue is that Apple promised all the music people that they said, you cannot get music off this iPod.
Right.
The iPod could be the most, speaking of sharing, the most sharing-est device ever. Mm-hmm. But because there's a barrier of basically they hide the directory where all the files are,
right.
It's invisible. So you can't just go and move files off.
And even within that, they are all the file names are changed to something.
Yeah, it's like 12, 14, 19. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the directory structure of an iPod, it's like, this is impossible.
Right.
Several pieces of software that you can go in there and get that stuff out if you really want it.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of things that we can talk about, and one of them is a program called Snooty, which is iPod spelled backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what this tool does is it's a Mac tool. It's only a Mac tool, and it lets you copy everything from an iPod back to iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with this is that it doesn't go both ways. It only sucks.
Right.
It doesn't put files on the iPod. There's another tool that actually does, and I didn't print this. There's a comparison of all the iPod tools on Wikipedia, which is wikipedia.org/wiki/comparison_iPod_managers.
Sounds like one for the notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a great little chart, too. I mean, it gives all kinds of additional information, things that until I found it, it was like, wow, I didn't know there was a nice little resource like this. Yeah.
The comparison of iPod managers.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you can find out that there's other tools that are you know, more, powerful than Snooty.
Right.
Like, for example, iPod Extractor is way more powerful because it will actually let you put files back on the iPod.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another program called Floola, F-L-O-O-L-A, and
that one's cross-platform.
Yeah, it's cross-platform. So Linux, Mac, and Windows. So that one's actually free. Free as in free. So that if you get, you know, if you're at your parents' house and they only have a Windows machine and you need to sync your iPod, that's the tool to use.
Right. Well, there's also, was it Media Chest? Is that the other one?
I don't know that one.
Media Chest, I think it's a cross-platform. It works with all the systems, Mac, Windows, Linux. And I think it does everything but, strangely enough, podcasts.
Wow.
Media Chest, the online organizer, the one that helps you keep track of your media and what you've borrowed and all that sort of thing.
No, I'm pretty sure it's a standalone.
Standalone app.
I think so.
We'll put a link to that one in the notes too.
Yeah.
I think the only one I've used is the iPod. It's either iPod Rip or iPod Extractor. It's been a while since I've used it, but it was one of those scenarios where the person ended up with a bunch of stuff on their iPod, but no longer had it
on a machine
or in an iTunes library ready to associate back. So yeah, they had an issue.
The cool thing about that is even if you've purchased a bunch of music and you're extracting them, once you've loaded them into iTunes and you've reauthorized your computer, that music will play again.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, sometimes people get stuck even just in iTunes because they don't realize that iTunes is set to manage their music, which is one thing that I know drives a lot of people crazy. Like, well, why can't I just drag a song to my iPod? And it's because they have iTunes doing management of their playlist and music on their iPod.
True. So let's talk about the problem. No, we're not going to talk about this. The conversion of DRM to AAC files.
The conversion?
Yeah.
Getting
yourself out of that.
And the circumventing of a copy protection, John? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about that.
Well, hypothetically, if one was to attempt to do something like that...
My way around it is I never bought any AAC files.
You never bought any AAC?
The only thing that I ever bought on iTunes was the Europe Final Countdown video because a young person in our office didn't get the reference from Arrested Development where they were using that song as the background music for the Magic Show. So I had, as an educational move... Had to buy that video. But yeah, I had an eMusic subscription for a while. I decided I was not going to go down the DRM route for purchasing anyway. And luckily, things are now shifting the other way where you can get through Amazon and other folks.
Right.
You can get non-DRM stuff. I mean, Apple. Even Apple, if you want to pay for those.
Well, technically, it's they say it's non-DRM'd, but there's still DRM or tracking management stuff in those music files.
Oh, no kidding?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, watermarks and that. The thing is that who's going to go and single out a person for DRMing a song?
Right. It seems like that's all quieted down, the sort of the slap type suits.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. You never know.
You never know. Exactly. Well, and then the thing is that a lot of people want to make this a big deal about being able to move something from another device or have it get moved forward. And Cory Doctorow has a lot to say about this. And I'm going to say this as the counterpoint to everything that Corey's said.
Mm.
At some point, you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want to listen to that particular track anymore.
Mm.
And you're like, well, I've heard this and I don't, I've moved on in my musical taste and I don't need this.
Right.
And so it really becomes a non-issue. Now, if it was your own file, like for example, if it was a MacBreak Tech performance that got DRM'd and there was no way to get it out other than to, you know, hook up two Macs together using string.
Sure. It's some annotation of old family video files that your mom did or something like that.
Yeah. They accidentally pressed the wrong button and they became dermed up.
They hit the big DRM, the big green DRM button.
The green DRM. What was green? I like the color.
Yeah,
green.
Sure. It's go, right?
It means go. But the thing of it is that at some point you just, like, look at all the CDs that you don't listen to already that are in your music collection. That you're like, I'm just going to take these down to Amoeba and off them. Mm. And the Amoeba guy gets there and he goes, oh, we don't want this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like the sad, pathetic note of your musical collection when the used guy doesn't want them either.
It just depends, I guess, on how you end up interacting with stuff. If you are someone who likes the single of the week and you're buying those one-off songs because you like the song for, you know, 6 months or whatever until you get tired of it. Yeah, I could definitely see there being some sort of transience to your music library. I guess it all depends on your relationship to the music.
Yeah, well, I think that the people who are buying the idea of one song, like, you know, they're like, oh, there's no good songs on that album. Like, well,
it should be an indicator to you.
Maybe. Yeah. Huh. Maybe this idea of fleeting is there.
Although in defense of the single, there are some times where a band just comes up with a great song.
Yeah.
And their stuff is okay. But, you know, that one is a standout. And it's not just a flavor of the month sort of thing.
It's just that was the only thing that everyone liked.
Mm-hmm.
The producer was out of the room at the time when they fixed that song.
Right. The committee was at lunch.
Yeah. Like, we'll just do this one jam, and it accidentally gets put on there because the band uses their veto power to get that one on. And then it's their hit.
Yep. The one-hit wonder phenomena.
So, anyway, I don't think that, you know, like, we could go on about the AAC conversion stuff. Thing is that if you're really bugged that your stuff is, that your files are DRM'd, there's ways to get the files converted into something else. You know, there's the dreaded analog hole that hasn't been filled, and that will always be the way to make something go. Although it is a 1-to-1 ratio.
How do you mean?
It takes an hour to record an hour, and then you've got re-encoding to do, and you know, it's a lot of work.
Right.
There's no real good way to automate it.
It's the 1-to-1 reason is the same reason that I have a bunch of LPs that haven't been reissued on CD somewhere that I would I always think, oh yeah, I'm gonna just, you know, capture them aside at a time and then I'll break them up and then I'll it never happens.
No, it'll never happen. Well, like your old Dr. Demento tapes, you know, from when you were in high school that if you played once, the oxide's gonna fall off as it goes over the head, right? And so you're never gonna cut those up, right? You're gonna bring them in for whatever. You're going to play the whole entire thing, and then you're going to go, all right, well.
You need a scanner type gun that you can just point at the cassette, and it just takes the whole thing and
like a infrared thermometer.
Sure.
Pointed at something, and that's hot.
Right.
Well, I will say there are some great little pieces of software out there, though, that will let you do that. If you are one of those people that does have a great vinyl collection and you have some stuff that just has never been reissued or you really want that vinyl sound, there are ways of getting that.
Just doing the gap detection sort of stuff?
Yeah, there's several different packages that will do that for you.
Doesn't the tool from Roxio do that? Isn't there
CD Spin Doctor, I think, is the
Spin Doctor
that does that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool tool.
I wish I could say I had really precious and or rare vinyl. It's mostly just a bunch of junk that I love. that is scratchy and poppy, but yeah, is also no one else saw fit to bring into the digital age, so I'm the only one.
There's a reason why that didn't get moved forward.
This is that music John was talking about earlier that is better left yeah, in the exactly. in the history's dustbin.
If that song never plays again, did the band exist?
That's funny.
Well, let's talk about some consolidation ideas. So one of the things that you can do to help you share music within your household is to assign all your music to a single location. So that Mac that you're about to retire because it's too old and slow to do real work, mm-hmm. guess what? That mm-hmm. makes an awesome music server.
Right. A mini that you have sitting somewhere that's on the network, with maybe an external drive attached to it.
Well, like those, you know, a G4 from 1999. You know, that's mm-hmm. that. While it can't use a big hard drive, like you can't just put a 500 gig mm-hmm. hard drive in it. You can put FireWire drives that are that big on it. Right. And then, you know, you have it in the corner. You could then plug your iPod into it, go to any computer that has VNC running on it, chicken to the VNC. Mm-hmm. Open the chicken.
Open the chicken.
Make sure that your music is consolidating with the iPod, and then when you're all done, off it goes.
Yep.
That way, you know, no matter how many iPods you have in the house, they'll all be able to use that one thing.
Right.
That works pretty well. But you know, it doesn't have to be, like I said, it doesn't have to be a powerful Mac. It just has to mm-hmm. have enough storage on it.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice thing about these sort of network things that are playing the role of network appliances. They can be very, very low power. They just have to have a fast enough connection. Mm-hmm. You want the fastest connection you can get, whether that be the G or a gigabit Ethernet if you can, if you're wiring it up. But other than that, it needs nothing under the hood to make mm-hmm. it go.
And well, you do want to be able to run Leopard on it, I think.
Sure.
Because the screen sharing is built in. And I can go network to that printer, to that printer. I can go network to that machine. And so instead of having to install the VNC server and use my chicken, I can just go click on my destination, which is music, and then share the screen. And mm-hmm. then I've got the same effect.
Although you can use an older, if you're just doing pure drive sharing or data sharing, you can do that with the older systems still. Not a problem.
No,
so you could just have your library shared across the network.
That's true. And then you know, you could have iTunes going into that specific thing every time, and it would mm-hmm. it would work just fine.
Yep.
Yeah. For streaming audio, it's not taxing enough that you would run into network issues, even on a B network, probably.
B is mm-hmm. fine for that kind of stuff. Yeah. B is really slow for copying, but for playing whatever
a
music,
single
audio stream, no problem. Yeah. You can do that all day long.
Unless you have it as Apple lossless codec, then you've got this huge file that probably
that might be a bit
stream
big.
Across there.
Yeah, and then FLAC might be a bit big too, but
yeah.
Does the Squeezebox play FLAC files?
I didn't check. I don't know.
Can you check that? Because that would be interesting to know if it did. Because then that
out of curiosity, do you guys? I'm a big fan of AAC, so I encode all my stuff to AAC 320, you know, high quality, because I want to have the best quality but still have a nice compression.
Right.
But I know a lot of people are like, well, but I want to play that music on other devices or things like that. And so they're always like, well, I have to encode it as MP3. And I tell a lot of people, it's like, well, there are actually a lot of devices that support AAC unencrypted. So there's like a lot of the Motorola phones you can drop an AAC audio file on and it will actually work.
Right. Well, even the Zune will do AAC unencrypted.
Right.
The Squeezebox will do both, or all three. They'll do Apple lossless, FLAC, and WMA lossless.
Very cool.
Yeah, as well as the other stuff you would expect. I tend to just do 100% VBR, 100% quality VBR MP3s is what I've been, for just nominal listening stuff. I archive stuff with some sort of lossless codec. If I'm taking it off CD, I'll make a lossless version mm-hmm. of it for later.
A friend of mine actually did the task of re-encoding all his music.
Mm.
Because his ears got trained.
He had done it to MP3 first.
Yeah, he did it to MP3 first. And so he's doing MP3 320s now.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. he's like, okay, I can't hear that. But there was this one day when he's like, oh, what is that?
Yeah.
Then he started hearing it everywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing. Once you get used to not hearing those artifacts, when they get reintroduced, they're very apparent.
Yeah. No, in fact, I've gone through and I have I have been over the past year basically re-encoding my entire library. So I'm almost through my CD collection of re-encoding it into iTunes. So that's part of the reason why my library now takes up over or pretty close to a terabyte of space. Well,
so you did the same thing. You had done everything to and a lower bitrate format before, and now you're going back and getting everything lossless? Or
I'm actually doing the entire collection in two ways. I'm doing a lossless for my really the stuff I really like, but then I also do most of the stuff, like stuff I'm not really worried about. You know, it's a generic CD, but I want to have it in my library. I do all that at 320 AAC.
Oh, okay.
So so I either have a bunch of lossless or a bunch of AAC 320.
Right.
Hmm. All right. Well, I want to tell everybody to not steal music. Support the bands that you like. Even if you don't buy their music, at least support the band.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of indie bands now, you can buy their stuff online.
Yeah, it's getting easier and easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, for those that don't know, CD Baby has put a lot of bands in iTunes even. I mean, or you can buy it directly from them, so.
What else do we know? Do we have any other questions that we need to answer? I think we're here.
Well, one of the things I do want to mention, too, for those that have had questions about it or haven't tried it or don't have an iPhone, is purchasing music on an iPhone or even an iTouch wirelessly, I think actually works pretty nicely if you're on a good connection. And it's a great experience because I've actually tested buying an album through iTunes, downloading it onto my iPhone, and stopping it halfway through. And then when I got home, reconnecting it, and iTunes just picked up where it left off and started downloading to my computer locally and already had resynchronized all the music that was downloaded to my iPhone.
That's amazing.
Wow. So I was very impressed. It worked seamlessly. You know, I tried to actually give it the hardest scenario I could where it's like literally cutting it off in the middle of download, being very abrupt about it, things like that. And it worked really nicely. So
amazing. No, that the whole device, the whole iPod Touch, when you think about this from a future point of view, what a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the fact that it's not open yet and it will be within any moment now, it's really going to – I believe that this is a paradigm-shifting device.
Yeah.
Just the whole move to two handhelds as the you wouldn't necessarily have thought of it as the evolution of desktop computing to go back that other way to these smaller, limited in terms of their screen real estate and keyboard size and input and all that stuff. But it increasingly seems to be the preferred format. And it makes sense. It's just one more thing to untether us from big machines and being in one location.
But you know, maybe the you know, when we look at this from, you know, from a now point of view, we're like, oh, I have to have my keyboard and my power, you know, all the power and all the storage and all this other stuff. But when you think that, okay, I have this device that's only 16 gig, but then it can go back to somewhere else and retrieve that or harness power or, you know, do other things. Pretty cool.
Well, I was a company like Palm or even the Windows Mobile guys, I would, you know, be a little concerned because the iPhone and iTouch have pretty much surpassed them already as mobile computing platforms.
Oh, well, yeah. Although, if you follow the top of the money, from a corporate point of view, it's not even the iPhone is not even anywhere near ready to take on this task.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's several reasons why, but that's another program unto itself.
Sure, sure. But I'm just saying that, you know, there's a reason. Actually, there's a reason why it's not corporate compatible yet.
What's that?
Well, because you don't become everything all at once. You know,
oh, no, totally.
You know, you go through the iterations. Well, you have to start with the 1.0, right? Yeah. And so instead of trying to be all things to everybody in your 1.0, you go, well, what's the most useful things that we can put here? Maps, for example, the new way that bookmarks work, for example, all that stuff, you know, and it's training the kids how to use these things. And so you start off with some simple things and then, you know, like they did with the Mac 128 and over time you make something that sucks less.
And adoption wise, the large organizations are always moving slow. They need time to figure out how it's going to snap into their architecture and how they're going to take care of all the security and those sorts of requirements.
Yeah, so. Well, they didn't get that much of a chance because the CEO was like, "Ooh, I want that."
Right. Yeah, that's the way to inject yourself into the system. Make it something the CEO wants.
It's like I know you don't get a choice to say no. I want this.
It's too pretty. Yes.
It's too pretty.
Make
it's,
work.
It's a, yeah. it, do, it does maps.
It does maps.
It does maps.
Well, you know, there are other issues behind that, but, you know, I want to share my music across the network on my phone. Can I do that yet?
Yeah. You can make a phone call to your server. Play that song.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up, I think.
All right.
I don't have anything else to say other than if you enjoy the show, let us know. Send us email to info@macbreaktech.com. Be sure to go to the website once in a while. We're trying really hard to make all the articles work there, but it's like, do I become a publication?
Right.
Do we compete with the other guys or do we just link to stuff? We are making original content, so yeah, sure, why not? Check out the reviews on iTunes. If you really like what you hear, let everybody know. Also, tell your friends to listen to Mac Break Tech.
If you have a fantastic sharing setup or scheme that you use to keep your music in sync or share it with other folks in your family, let us know about those too. I'm sure we weren't comprehensive in our roundup here. I'm sure somebody's got some fantastic thing that they they've cooked up at home.
Yeah, and I want to hear about that because I know that there's. That the people have all kinds of tricks and tips and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the like I said in the beginning of the show, I don't have a sharing music problem. Mm-hmm. I don't have to move.
One of the lucky ones.
I'm one of the lucky ones. Well, some people would go, dude, you're a loser. You should have such problems.
Well, and one of the things I know we didn't talk about, but there's tons of them out there, and there's actually some great even apps that are built from this, are Apple scripts to do iTunes library management. There's some great little Apple script applications that have been built out there and so forth that really do some nice things with iTunes.
Isn't that like Dan's scripts or whatever that is?
I think so. Is it Dan?
Dave's, Doug? Dan's, Doug. Doug's. Doug's scripts.
Doug's. Doug's Apple scripts.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. So. Yeah, he has a really good script for handling duplicates. He has a really good script for handling duplicates. He has a really good script for handling duplicates.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm John Foster.
And I'm Ben Durbin.
And I'm Ken Chicato from Remote.
And we'll see you on the other side.